Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla for Independence Day 2014. And I hope that you're enjoying your time off, or if you're one of those people who is in a service industry, taking care of people, relaxing, hopefully you're enjoying this podcast. So, Layla, continue with the questions. What else do we have this hour?
We have a question from Bob. Is there some type of exercise that would promote fat burning for hours after the exercise session is over?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Well, strength training for one thing.
Yeah.
Strength training, weightlifting, all of that. Certainly cardio is very effective, but incorporating strength training is ensuring that you eventually become a fat-burning machine even at rest.
Right.
Even while you sleep.
You get that afterburn, right.
Yeah.
And another thing that it does is it elevates growth hormone, which helps with repair, and also tends to prioritize lean tissue, muscular tissue, over fat. So people who are shooting up growth hormone, they look pretty buff. But you can replicate that effect naturally with more, to a great extent, strength training. I favor strength training over simply aerobic, you know, just getting on the Stairmaster and banging it out. That's good. You know, it's good for your heart. It's good for your circulation. But the fat burning comes, to a large extent, from the strength training.
Yeah. And there are certain supplements that help to enhance that. I like carnitine for fat burning. There is some
literally for that, because what it does is, if you look at, you know, you study a biochemistry text, what does carnitine do in the body? It acts as a shuttle for fat to get fat into the cell and into the mitochondrion, where it's burned for fuel, for the powerhouse of the cell. So without that shuttle with carnitine, your fat doesn't get burned.
Right.
So that's very appropriate.
Right, right. And for that boost of growth hormone, this is an important point I want to tell avid exercisers. After you finish your exercising, especially your strength training workout, don't necessarily go and eat a banana or a blueberry-flavored yogurt or something like that, because, or a smoothie or a muscle milk, even worse, because any sugar contained in that is actually going to stunt the amount or reduce the amount of growth hormone you're secreting. You don't want to undo the effects of exercise that way, by going too far into replacing your glycogen immediately.
Hmm.
I think it's best to stay away, or just go have your regular lunch or your dinner or your breakfast, or whatever it is that you have.
What about the, like, people take branched-chain amino acids?
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah,
branched-chain amino acids, like in whey protein, is a wonderful idea to take for...
But unsweetened. You would recommend it unsweetened.
Unsweetened would be best.
Right. And in terms of actual thermogenic agents, there are two. There's EGCG from green tea, which literally is thermogenic. It's actually been shown to increase fat burning, although that can occur with without exercise. Of course, it's better with exercise, but it's thermogenic per se. And then the hot chili pepper. I mean, everybody knows lots of hot chili peppers. You know, you break out into a sweat, but that's unpleasant. So the Japanese have developed capsaicin, which is a capsaicinoid. It's capsaicin-like. It's like a chili pepper, but it's sort of chili pepper without the bite, without the sweat. And, you know, you may say no pain, no gain, but in this case, they've demonstrated that this is actually thermogenic. There's a little bit of a fat burning capability. You know, we're not going to say that it's the miracle cure, fat whacker, magic for incredible amounts of weight loss.
There is no magic bullet, but this is helpful.
Yeah.
It's helpful, and the best way to take capsaicin for those who are interested is you take three before breakfast, sometime before breakfast.
No, so apropos of which, we've got one of our staff members whose name we will withhold, but it's not Grimaldi, who was actually too thin. Because we have a story about how she gained weight in our newsletter last week. But another of our staff members, she's kind of concerned. You know, she's a mom. She's in her, 30s. And she's starting to, have those issues that women get. And so we undertook kind of a project to see if we could get her to jumpstart her metabolism. And I started by giving her thyroid, which absolutely is one of the most thermogenic things you can do. So yeah. I gave her a little bit of natural thyroid. She really seems to like it. She looks, I mean, as soon as I gave it to her, she looks different. She looks less puffy, less bloated, in fact. And then she uses the CAPC8. Now, what's the best way to use the CAPC8?
It's in the morning before breakfast. You take 3 upon waking up.
Okay, and just that's not really worry about it through the rest of the day. Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily. Some people like to take another dose of 3
right.
sometime in the middle of the day
okay.
between a meal, but it's best to take it on an empty stomach, yeah.
Okay, so those are some of the things that can be helpful. And, yeah.
Making sure, and it's vitamin D again, making sure your vitamin D levels are where they should be beyond sufficiency is excellent for muscle training. And for muscles to use glucose properly, and all of that, so very, very important to have good vitamin D levels as well.
Good.
And by the way, there was a study done. You know, what's the optimal amount of strength training one should do in a week?
Yeah.
2 is good. However, 3 is better. It has been shown that you get optimal lean body mass and maintenance of that lean body mass when you strength train 3 times a week rather than 2.
Okay.
And for people who don't know, you always need a day off in between strength training sessions. You don't want to strength train the same muscle groups on consecutive days.
Right. Well, right. That means I'm short 1 or 2 sessions already this week, so I better get going.
There you go.
Okay. it's been a it's such a short week, and
it is a short week. Yeah. And it's busy and getting ready to go away for the weekend and so forth.
Right. The big getaway. So,
yeah.
What is our next question?
Our next question comes from, actually, she's a patient of mine here, so I'll withhold her name. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'd like to pose a question to you for my daughter in Florida, who suffers from psoriatic arthritis and neuropathies and is on methotrexate and prednisone for nerve damage.
Wow.
The methotrexate has now caused liver problems, and we're wondering what she can take alternatively for her condition, as well as slowly eliminate the prednisone. She was advised by the doctors that if she stops the prednisone, her joints would once again ache and she would be on her walker. What can she replace the prednisone with that won't cause all these problems, as she's gained an awful lot of weight? She's 43 years old, 5'6", weighs 189 pounds, even though she lost 10 pounds recently, and she's also diabetic. Wow.
Wow, this sounds like a country western song. it's really not a happy circumstance. All right.
Right.
Well,
but if you play that country western song backwards, you get everything back that you lost. Did you ever hear that joke? You get everything back. You get back your job, your wife, your dog, your pickup truck. Everything comes back.
Hey, that's a good one. I have to try that. All right. So this one is dedicated to in Florida. There are several issues here. You know, what do you do for psoriatic arthritis? What are some of the things we might do with a patient like that?
Well, first of all, we would look for gluten sensitivity, casein, all of that immediately, or even just straight away have her eliminate those particular foods. The fact that she is diabetic, that would be taken care of naturally, because a diabetic diet would be low in carbohydrate and no grains at all.
And the diabetes might be worsened by the prednisone, for sure, right?
Right, exactly. And I wonder if the prednisone was the cause of the diabetes or not. We don't have that information here.
Mm-hmm.
But she is 5'6 and 189 pounds, so this is problematic. We would look at vitamin D levels. We would look at ModuCare. You would prescribe a low-dose naltrexone.
Yep.
Probably. Right? Other things, anti-inflammatories, Boswellia, curcumin, fish oil. The omega-3s are very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Lots of curcumin, lots of Boswellia.
I think we're on the right track there. I see a very high percentage of patients with psoriatic arthritis being sensitive to wheat, and they do much better when they get off of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
The getting off prednisone, that's a tough one, because prednisone is really habit forming. The body becomes really addicted to it. And so when you get off prednisone, you want to support the adrenals so the adrenals come back. So you use natural things like ashwagandha, perhaps some licorice, Although you have to be careful. You have to be careful when you're using licorice at the same time using prednisone. Phosphatidylserine,
phosphatidylcholine.
Phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine actually helps to support patients going off, and quercetin. Quercetin is actually pretty good. What we term steroid bridge. It actually helps sometimes to bridge the gap when you're weaning off of prednisone. So that's something worth considering.
Yeah. I would also look for food sensitivities to remove anything causing inflammation that would further exacerbate her joints.
Yeah.
This is a
really unhappy situation. I mean, I was being facetious about the country western song, but you're really playing both ends against the middle because you have a condition, psoriatic arthritis, which is a serious condition. You're treating it with prednisone, which is effective, but it's courting another condition, which is diabetes. It's promoting weight gain. This could go south in a bad way and really cause, you know, some very serious medical consequences over time that, you know, ultimately could lead to, you know, it's already led to diabetes, then cardiovascular disease, strokes. I mean, this could be a person who's in real trouble medically.
Yeah.
So it really calls for a radical health intervention here, not just to take a couple of vitamins.
No,
it just reads like really got to turn it around because this is the juncture where if we don't stop this vicious cycle of more prednisone for the inflammation, more diabetes, more weight gain, more lethargy, this is going to end badly.
And, you know, the methotrexate she's been taking has been causing liver problems.
Oh, boy.
So that's another thing right there. Help with liver, at least. N-acetylcysteine, phosphatidylcholine, which you already mentioned, maybe some milk thistle as well. But this is a comprehensive consult.
Yeah, you know, I got to say, this is an easy one, and we're offering some suggestions, but it really does require professional medical care. And, you know, there's a lot of people offering great nutritional advice. You know, there's health coaches, and there are dietitians, and there are nutritionally oriented chiropractors and acupuncturists. And many practitioners out there. But, you know, when you're on so many medications, I really value my medical perspective because I kind of know when to hold and when to fold. You know, some people say, well, don't go to a doctor because the doctor just tell you to take drugs. But for me, my medical training has told me when drugs are necessary and when they can be successfully tapered. Because, as you know, the doctor has issued kind of a negative statement saying, oh, you know, if you go off these medications, you're going to be just horrible pain. And, you know, that's psychologically kind of debilitating to tell a patient like that. It's like putting a voodoo curse on them. But to some extent, it's true, is that if you withdraw prednisone improperly, your symptoms are just going to flare, and you're just going to want to run back to the shelter of the prednisone. So you have to be very careful in tapering it. You've got to use other medications sometimes to take away the requirement for so much prednisone. And it really, you know, it's an addictive and dependency-forming kind of thing. Anyway, anything else that we have?
Okay, actually, we do have another question if we have time.
We do.
And this comes from, this is from Janina in Poland, who's a very, very big fan of yours.
Oh, great.
And she actually sent us several questions, but let me...
I thought you were going to say she sent us a kielbasi.
Send us a kielbasi.
Send us a kielbasi.
Would you send us a kielbasi?
Send us a kielbasi. See if it gets through customs. I don't know if it will, because the kielbasi sniffing dogs may spot it and it'll be confiscated. So don't bother.
Yeah, don't, Janina. Anyway, thank you for your comments, Janina. Too long to really get into here, but a question for you, Dr. Hoffman. In one of your older podcasts, you expressed a very careful opinion about the use of iodine because too much of it may cause problems as well as too little of it.
Thoughtful question. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's your question. Have you changed your mind about iodine since interviewing Lynn Farrow?
Yeah.
And her book, The Iodine Crisis. And what do you think? According to her, we're all iodine deficient. She promotes quite generous portions of iodine taken as high as 50 milligrams. What do you say to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It puts me a little on the spot because I did interview Lynn Farrow, and I think she's got a great book. It's very interesting. But I have to say, in my own practice, I'm a little more conservative. I seldom prescribe as much as 50 milligrams of iodine. I just prescribed a woman with breast cancer just 12.5 milligrams of iodine daily. And it can be very helpful for a variety of conditions. But, it's one of those things where you have to be a little careful because it can either cause the thyroid to flare or it can suppress the thyroid. I guess I need a little bit more of a comfort zone with this therapy before I go very aggressive on high-dose iodine replacement. I know there's some doctors who are advocates of it, but it's controversial. And, I'd like to sit down and talk to them and just make sure that it's safe and it can be properly controlled when you give it to patients.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about dietary sources of iodine.
Sure.
There's seafood.
Yep.
There's seaweed, as in seaweed salad, at your local Japanese restaurant.
Sometimes there's very weird colors sometimes. I wonder if they don't add like a lot of coloring artificial ingredients to it. I worry a little bit about that.
Really?
When I used to be macrobiotic when I was first getting into holistic medicine, and I ate a ton of seaweed, and we had hijiki, and we had wakame, and we sampled all the different types of seaweed. And, in fact, actually, where this thing about the thyroid comes from is Japan, where they consume a lot of seaweed. They actually find that the Japanese who consume tons of seaweed have a little bit of a suppression of their thyroid function. Mm. So that's a concern, is that too much may be harmful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And that's our question from Janita in Poland.
Okay. Well, hey, if you can't send us a pierogi, if you can't send us a kibasi, send us a pierogi, but make sure it's got to be gluten-free.
It's got to be gluten-free.
It's got to be gluten-free. So that's a tall order for you. I hope you're listening. And, maybe you can, that's a whole business plan for you in Poland is gluten-free pierogi. All right? Look, we just want a 10% cut on it, okay? And so send us your zlotys, that's the Polish currency, I think, the zloty.
Uh-huh.
Send us a money order in zlotys for, when you start making money hand over fist with your gluten-free pierogi stand over there in Warsaw. By the way, I got to say, I'm Polish when it comes down to it, because if you trace back my family origins back far enough, they go back to Poland, mostly what used to be referred to as Galicia, which is more southeastern Poland and the Ukraine area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of Jews lived in the 19th century. And my grandparents both came from Warsaw. They then emigrated to Western Europe, and then they survived the war and they made it over to the United States. But, my father was a German Jew, but his family, I believe, came from the East, if you go back far enough. And so, I guess you could say I have, Polish blood.
There you go.
So
you and my husband has some Polish blood.
Really?
Yeah.
And my grandmother and grandfather could speak Polish. They actually could speak Polish.
Wow.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So there's some fascinating factoids that you can put into your Independence Day celebration. We're all here in America now, and we're very appreciative of that fact. So let's celebrate this weekend, celebrate our independence, and let's reignite a healthcare revolution for ourselves and our families. And we hope that by listening to Intelligent Medicine, you'll be inspired to inaugurate your own healthcare revolution. That's what this program's all about, and that's what we're engaged in on a daily basis at the Hoffman Center, is facilitating people's own taking a stand on behalf of their own health.
Yeah. Happy holiday weekend, everybody.
Thank you, Layla, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This was Q&A with Layla, and this is Intelligent Medicine.